The Burrows of Berea is a conversational podcast.
We study the Bible and we talk about it.
Not all of us are of the same faith.
And one of us doesn't have a faith.
But we still love one another, and we're going to continue to talk about these things.
The things we believe in and the things we believe about what we read in the Bible. Not all of these are necessarily true. Some of it is opinion and speculation. Thank you for
listening and speculating with us.
There you go. That was good. Yes.
You are listening to the Burrows of Berea.
All right. Well, I've been waiting on this for 3 years, 4 years. Long time.
Yeah.
I've got my dear friend, Cherry Lewis, here with me. And I know she has been absent from the podcast for, I guess it'll be maybe a year in March or April. It'll be almost a year. And, you know, we haven't really talked about much that you've been on a sabbatical. And so I'm not going to share anything. We'll just let you do this because this is a testimony episode. And you've sat in on several of the ones we've done. So you know the format. You know how it works. So I'm going to ask you, no differently than I would anybody else, to the best of your ability, can you tell me the earliest memory of when you heard the name Jesus Christ?
I was probably maybe 4 or 5. My grandmother used to go to church regularly. She raised my younger sister. She raised her in church. She was a member of the Pentecostal church. And sometimes we would get to go to church with her. And that's where I first heard Jesus Christ. It was part of a couple of Christmas plays, if I can remember. It was kind of hit and miss. It wasn't something regular. that was about the most of it. And then I had a stepmother who, she was raised Baptist, but we never went to church. I know when I got to be in the sixth grade, I wanted to go start going to church with my grandmother more often. And my stepmother was very upset about that. She didn't want me to go to church with my grandmother. Different beliefs, didn't agree with it. Of course, the church that my grandmother went to, they spoke in tongues, and women didn't cut their hair, and they wore dresses, and they didn't wear their wedding rings, and didn't watch TV, several things. And so my stepmother didn't want me to be any part of that. And so I didn't get to go back to the church with my grandmother. I didn't go to church with my stepmother. And then, of course, then I became a teenager, and going to church really just wasn't of any importance to me at all.
So you'd been around it and you'd heard it, but it never really was a serious thing. You wanted it at one point, but it was a problem.
Yeah.
So by the time you get to your teenage years, it's let's do something else other than church.
By the time I got to be a teenager, I wasn't raised with my mother. My dad raised me. My brother left my dad's home, moved in with my mother, and my brother and I were very close. We had spent our whole childhood together, absent from our parents and things like that. And so when he left, I wanted to be with him. So then I ended up moving in with my mother, and we lived in the projects in Hendersonville. And so, you know, being poor.
Are these over by Jackson Park, those?
First Avenue.
Oh, First Avenue.
Yeah.
Okay, I know where you're at. Okay.
And so, you know, moving in with him and her and just different lifestyle, you know, you just kind of start winging things. Mm-hmm. You know, you just hanging out, being a kid, doing things. So church definitely was not any part of my life at that time. No.
Yeah. So So at any point during your teenage years, did it ever crop up at any point? Like, did anything, you know, anybody ever say you need to be in church, or did anything stick out at all?
No, not really. Mm-mm. I met my first husband when I was 15, and he read the Bible. He told me some stuff about the Bible, and he was really was interested in those kinds of things, you know. And then, of course, I ended up pregnant with my first child, 16, Gabriel, and got married. Unfortunately, though, my husband at that time became a schizophrenic. Hmm. And so he like ate pages of the Bible and thought he was a prophet. And so, no.
Wow. So really, you just, all of it kind of sounds kind of whack and crazy, doesn't it?
Yeah. At that point, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, that was different, strange, you know. But I know that from what I had been told from him previously before that, he, of course, had dabbled in some Satanism and, you know, stuff like that as a younger child. And so I guess I think he probably had some underlying issues all along, mm-hmm. And they just happened to come out during that time.
Yeah, just... Yeah. I suppose he was unmedicated, undiagnosed when you knew him.
Yes, yes. And then eventually he left and he never came back. And that was that.
Yeah. So take us from there. Take us from the time. Now you're a 16-year-old mother. You have a child. Mm-hmm. Are you in school, out of school? Have you got a job, or what's happening?
I had quit school.
You had quit school?
Uh-huh, I quit school.
Yeah. So what are you doing? Are you like just working jobs and living on your own, or what's happening?
So by the time all that happened with him, I had gotten pregnant with my second child. He was not the father of my second child. And so I was working at Subway, and I was riding a bicycle back and forth pregnant with my second child. So that was, you know, pretty much my first like full-time job. Mm-hmm. And so I had my own apartment and was working there, you know, nothing really about. At this point in time, with everything that I had been through and grew up with, you just develop this understanding, you know, you just handle everything. Mm-hmm. You know, thoughts of whether Jesus was real or not was irrelevant because reality was real. Yeah. Life was real. Your bills were real. Your children were real. Hard times were real. It's mm-hmm. just you did what you got to do to make it. And so I didn't really think too much about God or hell or any of that stuff.
Yeah, life was hell.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways,
just,
right?
I was just trying to make it. And so, you know, that was about it.
Yeah. So, not to fast forward, because I think we might go back and forth a little
That's
bit.
That's fine. Mm-hmm.
So, by the time that I met you, you were a mother of four.
Mm-hmm.
Your husband now, Rodney, was not your husband then, mm-hmm. and he had been in prison, which he's been on the show and shared his testimony, so everybody knows.
Yes.
No secret there. But, the first time I met you, somebody was trying to set me up with you.
Yes.
Remember that? Mm-hmm. We were at a softball field, which is hilarious. My ex-wife, this was back in the day. but I met you then, and then it wasn't too long after that it was me and Alice, and then you and Rodney, like we would hang out and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember how it all really started. Like we just started talking. I guess I started, maybe Alice was talking to you about church and Jesus and stuff too. And because I didn't really talk to Rodney or anything mm-mm. until you guys started coming up and like we'd have dinner together and hang mm-hmm. out. That's when we discovered mimosas.
Yes.
And they are awesome.
The best.
Because I remember whenever we got into the church where there was no drinking, we were like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Like mimosas.
I only had a mimosa once in my life.
Man. So we're both drinking coffee now, but the thing that I remember early on was just, I don't know that you were, I'm not saying that you were like a full on atheist. I just think that you were just like, you know, the whole idea of this doesn't make sense to me anyway. Like why, if God is good, you know, those age old questions, if God's good, then why, you know? So I guess, you know, coming through life by the time you and I were talking, I was just really curious, like, Were we like religious freaks in your eyes or like fanatics or?
No. There aren't many people that I am even willing to listen to.
Yeah.
There aren't any people that really I get close to. I learned that as a child.
Mm-hmm.
The less you get close to people, the less likely they are to do any harm to you.
Oh, yeah. I know that very well.
And so I stay away from people. Mm-hmm. I'm not a people person. I don't socialize. Mm-hmm. I'm quite content dancing to my own beat, but you know that about me. But you and Alice were different. And I could tell that y'all were sincere. You know, I knew that, that you were two people who were never going to cause any harm to me. And so I trusted what you guys said, and I enjoyed spending time with you, and I called you my friends. And I guess you guys had started going to church or something. And Alice did talk to me some about going to church at work. But
yeah, you were both nurses.
Yeah, we worked together. We were best friends. I don't know. I mean, it's not that I needed it to be real. Like, everything in my life is real.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Good or bad, it's all real. And for some people, probably for everybody, and it's just viewed at from a different point. You know, if you want someone to believe in whatever you're going to believe in, it has to become real for them, or they're not going to believe in it. Just like me and you sitting here, if we couldn't, if we didn't know we were both real, we wouldn't be having this conversation,
right?
And so, you know, you'd kind of talk to me a little bit, and she had talked to me, but the one thing, you had a book, and I don't remember the name of that book, but it was about love. And you had said something to me. We're standing, we were at y'all's house, and you had said something to me about love and like being loved. And it like nothing or nobody ever being able to take that away from you. And considering my life and the way my life had always been, love really wasn't real.
Yeah. It could be taken away.
Yeah. I mean, love come with standards or consequences or, you know, failures, you know, people just didn't meet up to what the standard should have been for what my idea of what love should be, or, you know, you're loving somebody and they're not loving you back the same way. And, you know, the only love at that point in time that I had experienced that to me was real was the love for my children.
Right.
And my love for my children.
Yeah. And that was real.
Yeah. And that was it. That was pretty much it. So when you said that to me, that caught my attention. I thought, well, what could that be?
Yeah.
You know, and so, I, like I said, I can remember seeing the book. It was a white paperback book. But, and I don't even know that I ever even opened the book and read it. I don't know.
Yeah. You know how many books I have? Like, I don't even know which one it is. You know, I know it wasn't The Five Love Languages by Gary Chapman.
No,
That's a purple book.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. I don't know. Who knows?
So that one caught me. And then, in the interim of that was when I started moving from Saluda up to Fletcher.
Fletcher, yep.
Yeah. And so you guys were going to the church up here, and y'all were having a play.
Yes.
Yeah, you were having the play. And so Alice had asked me to come to the play, and so I came. I came to the play and watched it. Glad it was dark.
Yeah. Did you cry?
I did. I cried.
Oh.
And for anybody that knows me, I don't like to cry at all.
No.
But yes, I cried. And I remember talking to Rodney on my way when I'd left. Rodney said, well, what'd you think about it? This and that, you know. And Rodney and I, we really didn't. Like, Rodney had been in prison, and he had said he had gotten saved in prison. He'd gotten baptized in prison. His mom's got a picture of it. But he and I really didn't talk about God or none of that stuff, because well, no different when he got out. I mean, it was in some ways, but in other ways it wasn't. So it just wasn't a conversation. You would expect this drastic change in somebody, right? So that wasn't what it was. So we didn't talk about it. But he asked me what I thought about the church, and I told him it was nice, and I told him I'd probably go back sometime. And then life just swung right back into life, you know? And Alice kept talking to me about going to church, you know, and started getting on my nerves with it, you know? And it was like every time I turn around, all of a sudden, that's all I would start thinking about. You know, walking down the sidewalk, if you think about, why do I got to think about this? It started getting on my nerves. I don't want to think about this all the time. Why? I don't want to talk about this. I don't want to think about this. This isn't important to me. This isn't real to me, you know? And so, unfortunately, she says, we're having, was it Vacation Bible School? No. Did you have the revival first?
We had a revival.
Yeah, the revival first. So she starts asking me, come to this revival. And I thought, gosh.
Yeah, that revival, it's kind of interesting. That revival was taking place. This is, this whole thing is so weird. Anybody that's outside of this group looking in has to think this is the craziest thing. At least I would think so, because at the church, they're having this revival and this thing ends up lasting like 3.5 weeks and yeah. It's every single day. Now, I'd never experienced anything like that. I'd been to revivals that were planned and, you know, this one kicked off. It was talking, they were talking about a revival and it was on. Never seen anything like it. Women had been in church for 50 years having these dramatic shifts in thought and even wondering if they were saved. And it just seemed like there was such a holiness about the place. It was wild to watch. And I was prepping because, believe it or not, you know, I'm preparing to go perform a wedding at the end of the week. And this wedding is Holly and her former husband. I'm going to perform their wedding for them. And there was a big concern that no one was going to be able to go to the wedding because the revival was taking place, because they're not going to stop the revival for just anything.
Right.
And so I know that Alice was asking you to come, and we were asking everybody to come. And the reason why is because it was transforming people's lives, including our own. And so it was really a good thing. And so it literally ended like the day before the wedding. It was so crazy how it all worked. But you never came. Mm-mm. You never did.
No. I found myself at 2:00 in the morning standing on my basement steps complaining to my now husband, who I didn't even speak to at this point in time. We lived in the same house together and we just passed by. Like, we literally had a room. Like, you could come out of the basement and go into this one room and you could come around the other way. We could avoid passing each other in the hallway. That's how much we didn't talk. And for some reason, I had a basket of clothes in my hands. And I was, of course, in my head. And I remember just turning around looking at him. He was down there tinkering with something. And I said, I don't even know why it matters to her whether or not I go to church. I said, I don't have to go to church to find God. I can stand right here. If I want to find God, I can find him right here on these steps, held in this basket of clothes. I don't have to go to church. And he just looked at me, because we weren't even having a conversation about it. It was just some blurt out, you know? Yeah. And he just looked at me and I just looked at him and I just turned around and walked up the steps. And she kept asking me, and she kept asking me, and I think, gosh, she's going to ask me again today. Are you coming? Are you coming?
Now, and that was for the revival part?
Yep, for the revival.
Yeah, okay.
And finally, I walked in one day, and she said, well, our revival's over. And I remember thinking, thank God, this thing is over. She's going to quit asking me to go to this thing. She's getting on my nerves. And she says, but we're going to start Vacation Bible School. So I want you to come to that. And I thought, this is never going to end. This is never going to end. But on the flip side of that, what nobody knew is that my brother-in-law, who's deceased now, he had been dealing with his own schizophrenia for several years.
Yeah.
And he didn't used to come, we like, he didn't come up, he didn't come out and about for years. And apparently, during all this time that was happening with me and Alice and you and everything else, he was finding God where he lived. Mm-hmm. His neighbor down the street, I guess, had went to prison or something, got out of prison and introduced Ronnie to Jesus. And I didn't know this. All of a sudden, my kind of weird brother-in-law starts showing up in my house normal again, you know. And he's like, well, I just want us to be family, you know. And he wanted us to go tubing. And like, all of a sudden, it was like he was himself all over again. Mm-hmm. So it was nice, because I didn't like Rodney, but I loved his brother. And so he was hanging out. And I was like, well, cool. Yeah, I got somebody to hang out with.
Right.
And unfortunately, around the time that I was like, okay, finally, I said, all right, Alice, I said, I'll come to your Vacation Bible School. Come to your Vacation Bible School. I didn't know at the time why Ronnie was different.
Yeah.
I just knew he was different. And so I was supposed to come. But we were going to go down to my mother-in-law's the next morning, and we were going to help my brother-in-law put some underpinning up underneath his trailer. And he and I, we talked the night before, we was going to go fishing, but I was going to come on, you know, and go to the Vacation Bible School with Alice. So, unfortunately, my brother-in-law was shot and killed that evening. Mm-hmm. And so, I didn't end up coming to the Vacation Bible School that day. But when I got down to his house, you know, the evening that it had happened, I walked into his house, and, you know, his TV's still going. It's like he just got up off his couch and left.
Yeah.
Gonna be back in 5 minutes. But I noticed over in the corner, there was a table set up now with praying hands, and there was a Bible there. That was never there before. So I got you and Alice talking to me about this and her begging me to come. And then somebody that, you know, had to note him. That wouldn't be there if it wasn't real for him.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that kind of keyed in, and I was like, okay. And then, of course, that was a rough time for all of us. But you started asking me about scriptures and things, you know. Have you ever thought about this? You ever thought about that? We were kind of talking back and forth. And so I agreed to come to Vacation Bible School.
You know, speaking about Ronnie, I went to his funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And towards the end of it, I just remember Jackie Prater being there.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that the preacher was saying, we were like amening and getting louder and louder as time was going, because we just, there was this wonderful acknowledgement that somebody who had been lost had been found, and that they had been able to bypass the rest of whatever this life can do to somebody, and was able to just, he already lived that life and he was able to go on to glory. And it's hard to let go of a person, but when you know that they have something like that, that's something that I knew that Jackie and I knew.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why we were amening like crazy. And I remember having that feeling for you guys there, like wishing that you both, you and Rodney, had that same thing. You know, I'd wanted you guys to understand it and to see it. I didn't want you to come into the hubbub that Christianity can be,
mm-hmm.
and all of the factions and the sects and all the differences, even though that's something that happens to us because we're in groups and we talk to people. Happens to me, happens to the best of us. I didn't want you to come into it for that. I wanted you to come in because of the hope. It was just the hope that I had, you know? And so I had, that's whenever, and you know, Rodney talks about in his testimony, a fasting friend. I've talked about it openly now because I give all glory to God. I'm not taking away because he already did the work, but it's the only time in my life that I've ever fasted was that time. Mm-hmm. And it was, there was just something I remember reading in the scripture where about the little boy that the father couldn't get the demon out of. And the disciples were there trying, and they couldn't get it done. And Jesus had been up on the mount with Peter, James, and John and done the transfiguration. And here they are coming down this mountain, and they come to this scene, and this boy is just writhing in absolute agony and pain. And Jesus asked the father, you know, how long has this been going on? He's like, since he was a little boy. I don't know how old this, maybe a young teenager or a 20-year-old man. I don't know. But I just remember that story and about how Jesus tells that father, you know, if you believe, then we can fix this, right? But the father says to him, I believe, but help me with my unbelief, which is a weird thing. It's a mental thing. It's when our brains get in the way. And I just remember feeling that for you guys, like your brains were in the way. Like life and the way you think about life and all of the things that come at you are keeping you from seeing or believing who he is or what he offers. And that was the first time I'd ever felt burdened to fast, because after he heals that boy, the disciples said, why can't we do it? And he said, there are some things that require fasting and prayer. And so for the first time in my life, I saw that and said, I'm going to put this into practice for these people that I love. I want to see you do something in their life. But there was so much tragedy and there was so much going on. You know, easily you could easily look at circumstances and say it's the circumstances that did it. But I don't believe that. I don't think that circumstances necessarily necessitate this relationship with Jesus. It's him.
Mm-hmm.
So I just remember you guys showing up on a Thursday at a Vacation Bible School. It was a Thursday. Vacation mm-hmm. Bible School started on a Monday.
Uh-huh.
And I hadn't eaten for 6 days. And on air, I'm going to ask you now, on air, Alice never told you that I was doing that, correct?
No.
That was a big thing for me, because one of the things about fasting is that you didn't want anybody to know. He says to comb your hair, not to show,
right.
You know, just present yourself to others and let this be in secret between you and me. And then I will reward you openly. I'll show you. And what is my reward? What would my reward be? Well, for me, it would be to see him do something miraculous in your life. That was the reward for me. And I wanted to see it openly. And so you guys showed up on a Thursday. I never expected that.
No.
I heard Rodney say, "Hey, man." And I just remember, I'll never forget it, Cherry. I was instantly starving to death. And I hadn't been hungry the whole time. I hadn't. All I cared about was that this message got in there somehow. Because I knew that there were drugs involved with Rodney that were going to prevent him, and alcohol or whatever else might be, the life, the things that are going on. There's so many things that prevent us from believing. You know, help me, help them with their unbelief. Help them get through that cloud because it's dark. And it's not your fault that it's dark. It's just the world, man. It's the life that we live in. It's the world we live in. And it's just, I remember feeling that and immediately being hungry when he spoke to me and just feeling released. Like he released me of it. But there was no reward yet. They were there. I mean, people come to church all the time. It doesn't mean anything. And I just remember eating an entire tray of Subway, which is funny that your first job was a Subway job. So my first meal after that was an entire tray of Subway. But you guys didn't come back.
Mm-mm.
You didn't come back right away.
Mm-mm.
And so I thought that I'd stopped my fast too soon.
No. We're stubborn. We're bullheaded, stubborn people.
Can I get an amen? No.
Well, yeah.
So you didn't come back, but you... Mm-mm. You guys did show up on a Wednesday night.
Yes. And
it wasn't too long after that, was it?
No.
Wasn't it the following week? I think we wanted you guys to come on that Sunday and you didn't.
Uh-huh.
And I remember being in prayer and being at the altar and doing all the things, you know, one of the things, and just asking God, "God, is this, did I stop?" Because I got to make something clear, everybody. I'm not saying this to promote me. I'm saying this to promote him. His word is true. And I got to observe, I got to watch it, and then I got to watch it all unfold. It was incredible. So you guys didn't come that Sunday, but that mm-hmm. Wednesday night, you showed up.
So when Ronnie had passed away, I stopped staying at the house here in Fletcher.
Mm-hmm.
I went down and started staying at my mother-in-law's,
mm-hmm.
where that Bible was.
Right, yeah.
And I got that Bible out of Ronnie's house, and I was reading out of that Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And you had wrote like this really long letter. Do you remember writing that letter?
Yeah.
Giving it to me?
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, me and Rodney, we didn't get along at all, you know.
Right.
During that time, you know, there were some friends down there. There was still drug use, you know, through all that, you know, some of Ronnie's friends and just things like that. And so we were staying down there. And I remember telling Rodney, I was sitting in one of his mom's rooms. And I said to Rodney, I said, I keep getting this strange feeling. I can't explain it to you, I said, but it's like we're walking over here in this pathway. I said, but I keep feeling that there's something over to the other side of this pathway, and that's the way we're supposed to go, and it's a better way. But I couldn't explain to him what that felt like or what it even was. I just keep getting this odd feeling, Rodney. And he's like, okay, you know, because Rodney, he kind of just goes with flow.
Yeah,
for the most part. Now, unless you hit a nerve, and then he don't go with the flow too much. But for the most part, he's like, okay.
If everything's cool, he'll go with it. But if it gets a little off,
if it's something, it's not going to go with it.
Yeah.
So he kept going, okay. Well, you had sent, I think it was about the maniac of Gadara. I think you had sent me some scripture about that. So I was reading that. And I don't remember how I got to the scripture, John 3:8,
mm-hmm.
you know, about where the wind comes and where it goes, but you don't know. And I remember for some reason I was down at my brother-in-law's house. I was by myself. Nobody was down there with me. And I remember thinking to myself, well, if you're real, you're going to have to show me you're real. So I went outside and I was looking at the tops of them trees blowing. I was watching the wind blow through those trees. And I remember thinking, it's got to be real. Yeah. If you ain't real, there ain't no point in it. Been through enough.
Yeah.
On something real. About that time, I swear it felt like something jumped right through me.
And when I breathed in, it was like breathing in like this, just this crisp, clean air I'd never breathed before. And I felt a tear run down my face. Mm-hmm. And I stood there by myself. And I remember thinking, well, I guess you're real, ain't you? And so I remember thinking, okay. And I didn't know what to do with that. I stood there. I was like, well, now what do I do? I don't know what to do with that. And that's when we showed up at church on that Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. I remember having on blue jeans. I can remember the shirt I had on.
I can too.
I can remember all that. Mm-hmm. I never even told Rodney. I never told nobody. Mm-hmm. I just said, well, I'm going to go up here because I didn't know what to do. And at that point in time, I felt like all I kept thinking in my mind was like I was at a crossroads. And I didn't know which direction to go. Mm-hmm. And so I went and I sat down and I listened to a preacher preach. And all I kept thinking is, I just need to ask him one question. I just need to ask him, which way do you go when you're at this crossroads? Which way do you go? I don't even know what he preached on.
I do. He preached on sloth. It was the worst sermon in history. Yeah, I tell Philip this all the time. I was like, it was the worst sermon I think I ever heard. But it didn't matter because you were...
I never heard it. So he's got it out with that one, so I never heard it. And
slothfulness.
And yeah. So I waited, and he'd come around, you know, he's greeting everybody. And he got to me, and I said, I want to ask you a question. He was like, okay. And so I said, well, you know, if you get to this crossroads, you know, how do you know which way you're supposed to go? Like, if you feel like you're stuck somewhere and you just don't know which way to go. So then he asked me, have you ever been saved? And I said, well, that's not fair. That's not what happened. I asked you a question. You didn't answer my question. You answered me with a question. And he said, well, have you ever been saved? And I said, no, never have. And so then he said, do you have a husband here? Rodney was talking to somebody. So
he was over. He was up in the vestibule where I was, because you were gripping the pew, saying, "I need to talk to the preacher." And he came back to you in the pew.
Yeah, Philip.
And all of us were in the vestibule because I just remember. I remember your hands being white, like you were gripped, like you were holding onto that pew.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, like, "Huh?" So we were up in the front. So we weren't really around. I knew what was happening, but I wasn't. I was just really silently praying is what I was doing.
Well, so he got a Bible, and he took me over to the right side of the church towards the back. He got Rodney, and you know what? He said, let's pray. And I bowed my head, and I don't even remember praying. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how to explain that. And when I opened up my eyes and I looked up, it was like I was floating. Mm-hmm. There had been so much weight lifted off of me in that moment.
Yeah.
And it was like the world. I know this sounds crazy. I don't know what anybody else's experience is like. And to be honest with you, it's irrelevant to me because I know what mine was like. Right. And anybody that tried to tell me I was wrong, I'd be like, hey, that's between me and God, not you, me and God. Mm-hmm. But it was like my life became a wonderful coloring book.
Yeah.
Like, I was free from so many things within myself, and everything looked brighter and more colorful, and it was just different. It was like amazing.
I remember you telling me one time that the sky even looked different.
Yeah, I pulled over because I was still staying in Marion, and I pulled over because I was driving up to work, and I remember pulling over to stop and look at the sun coming up in the sky, because it just was like the first time I'd ever seen it.
Yeah.
Looking at a blade of grass and seeing how green it was like the first time I'd ever seen it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wish things could have stayed that way.
Yeah.
That they didn't.
Well, that's the way it is in this side.
Yeah.
On this side.
Yeah. So, but it was wonderful. And then I just wanted everybody to feel it. Mm-hmm. Everybody experience it. And so I kept going to church. So I kept going to church, and Rodney obviously was not where I was, and he and I would not get along very well. Sometimes he would go to church with me, and sometimes he wouldn't. He
when he would go to church with me, before we could ever make it to the car, we were arguing so bad. He was so ugly. He was being so ugly. But then, you know, I didn't realize it was because he hadn't actually received any salvation at all at that point. Mm-hmm. He was just going. One time I asked him, I said, I got a question for you. He said, what's that? I said, you had no problem telling me no about anything else. I said, why didn't you just tell me no you didn't want to go to church instead of arguing with me all them times? He said, well, I ain't stupid. He said, I know if God was taking you to church and changing you, he said, I knew better than to argue with him. He said, or he'd take me out of here.
Yeah.
I wished I'd have tried that sooner.
Isn't that a weird way to believe in God? But he did.
Yeah. 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 Well, you know, of course he knew more about it than I did. You know, he'd been raised in it more than I had, but mm-hmm. you know, he has his own testimony. He's give it. So,
yep.
You know, I just know what it looked like from my side.
Right.
So, yeah. So, I kept going to church and we kept arguing about it. And finally, in October, Rodney went to church and he got saved.
Yeah.
And then things really changed for us a lot.
Yeah, I'll never forget those days.
Yeah, no. Me neither. I look back on them now, though. They seem so naive.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Considering, you know, from what, 2014 to now?
Yeah.
Lots happened, lots changed.
10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember, so it wasn't too long. You guys were in church. We were in church. We were all doing the play together, doing all kinds of stuff together. And and then Alice and I divorced. Mm-hmm. And I remember going and talking to the pastor about it, about what to do, you know, because that was my church home too. And you know, I said, honestly, you know, what do I do? And he said, I think, you know, since that was Alice's church since she was a little kid and it was in the family, you know, everybody was there, and whether or not I should be there or not. And he said, maybe you should go for a while. He didn't say forever. He said, maybe you should go for a while, you know, until these things kind of work themselves out, just for the sake of the children. And I remember it hurting my feelings a little bit, just a little bit, not a lot, but just enough. Cause I thought, you know, I feel like a giant kid in this, you know, like this world is so stinking messed up, you know, like trying to make sense of all this. I didn't feel like I needed to go, but I was like, you know, I'm going to honor what he said, you know, and I did. And I was really worried, not so much with you guys, because you've always just been genuine, you know. And I told you right out of the gate, you know, look, I'm not going to talk about anything that comes with this, my divorce and the relationship, like nothing. I'm not going to tell. And you are one of my dearest, best friends. But for the sake of what it was and all the people involved in the church and our beliefs and everything, I was like, this is no one's business. And I really meant it. And I still, as far as you know, I don't talk about it.
No.
And so there's, there was that. I was worried, you know, that I would lose a lot of relationships. And it wasn't long after that. Holly was getting a divorce too. And like all of that stuff was kind of happening at the same time. It was just a very bizarre time, especially for me, because I mean, I love the Lord with my whole heart and this whole thing is collapsing and I'm watching all of these relationships start to disintegrate. And I'm like, you know, this is awful. Divorce is awful. It's absolutely awful. But you didn't leave me. You mm-hmm. still hung out and, you know, and I just decided to just stay in the Word and just dig and dig and just keep learning. And, you know, I just remember, I don't remember even how it happened. I reached out to you one day and told you, hey, I'm doing this podcast thing, you know, but I couldn't think of a better person to come on and be on with me because I knew that you would be honest. And you are, you're genuine. You always have been. And that's one of the things I appreciate about you as my friend, is if I really want a true answer, I can ask you.
Yeah, just don't ask.
If you don't want to really know.
All right.
But you've always been that kind of friend for me. And so, you know, I asked you to come on and you listened to it. And then you came on and I wanted you to keep coming back and you did.
I enjoyed it.
And we've talked about so many things in here, whether it's, I mean, eschatology, systematic theology, just testimonies from all kinds of walks of life, people that believe, that don't believe. Like, we kind of went through everything. And then tragedy. Tragedy strikes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not asking you to talk about it. You don't have to. But it really did a number.
Oh, yeah.
On you and yeah. Rodney.
More than I realized.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And would you say it still is?
Yep, it still is. At least, I have to say, at least at this point, I think I'm coming more to grips with it.
Is sharing it with the audience something that you can tell?
Like, oh, yeah.
Because we haven't said.
Yeah. And what is it? Today is 2025. I lost 2024, folks.
Yeah,
it
went back quick.
I lost it.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize I was losing it. And then the next thing I know, it was gone.
Yeah.
But in May of 2023, my stepson was killed in a motorcycle accident. And that was Rodney's oldest son. And he was a, you know, obviously, Rodney was in prison, you know, and we have a lot of children.
You're talking about whenever your kids were younger, yeah. Rodney was in prison.
And so all of our children looked up to my oldest stepson,
yeah.
Because he was like a father figure, and he guided them and things. And so when he passed away, each of us on some level had our own style of grieving and reasons for grieving. And it's almost like our whole family just scattered everywhere between grandchildren, children, me, Rodney, Rodney's ex-wife, Fran. You know, it's just, it's really, I must say, this has probably been the worst thing that has ever happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, from the outside looking in, I remember sending you like, I do not have words. Like, I don't have words. And usually I'm the guy that comes with something.
But it's nice sometimes to have somebody that doesn't have words.
Yeah.
Because there's no words for that. I mean, really, there's no words for that. Like, I can't comfort Rodney with words. He can't comfort me with words. There's no words that we can comfort our children with. You know, you just have to accept it, that that's what it is, and there's no words for that.
Yeah. Well, and I think if it had been anybody but you, seriously, anybody but you, Cherry, I probably would have had words. But because I know you and because I know how real you really are, that these little, whatever these words would be absolutely just dust in the wind. And so all I knew is that I love you. That's all I knew what to say.
Well, when that happened, I didn't want to be loved.
I know.
Because I was angry.
Yeah.
And
angry at what or whom?
Everything.
Everything.
Anything, everything, myself. Just angry.
Yeah.
I didn't care.
The circumstances of the accident wasn't really an accident.
No. The individual admitted that he intentionally clipped our son.
His motorcycle, yeah.
Yeah.
And then what I do know is that this went to trial.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a very, very lenient sentence.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which doesn't feel like justice.
No.
So.
I didn't stay in the courtroom for some of it. I didn't want to hear it.
Yeah. It's.
I left.
How somebody could come right out and say, I did, like, my intention wasn't to kill, but I did this intentionally.
Yeah.
But then only to be really a slap on the wrist, if that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a petty little thing. And that person, I know that sent you guys into a downward spiral, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, I think I was already in it.
Yeah.
Not realizing it.
Yeah.
Like, like Rodney said to me the other day, he said, out of the 30 years that I've ever known you, he said, I've never seen you like this before.
Yeah.
You know, because I always maintain.
You've always been responsible,
yeah.
Did the right thing, you know, well, maybe not the right thing, but you always did the responsible thing when it came to your kids and life.
Yeah, I tried to do,
stuff.
You know, what I thought was what I was supposed to do. But for this past year, I could care less about the responsible thing. I could care less about the right thing. I could care less what anybody thought about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just out of control.
Yeah.
I mean,
and didn't care. I mean, they were like, one time we were riding on the motorcycle. It was dark. Rodney didn't know if we were going over 100 miles an hour. Took my helmet off. And I was like, if we wreck, fine, so be it. Yeah. Oh, he was mad at me. But I didn't care.
Yeah.
I was like, if I want to ride without this helmet on, I'm going to ride without this helmet on. If I wreck, I wreck. If I die, I die. Think,
what's the, like, what's the mind behind that? You just, you're done with life?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I guess it's like coming to a point where everything that you think life is, and all of a sudden it's not anymore. Mm-hmm. And you start thinking, well, what am I? Just a joke? Am I just living in some bubble? Like, even with God, you know, and was I just being stupid and living in my own bubble and thinking that life was just all this? And now it's really not that, mm-hmm. you know? And so I just got angry. I got angry about my whole life, like well before I ever, ever come to know Jesus or right. any of that stuff. Sure. Like I became very bitter. I became very angry.
Yeah.
I started drinking a whole lot.
Yeah.
And I just, I didn't care.
Yeah.
I didn't care.
Quick question about the drinking. When with the drinking aspect, was it to numb?
Oh, yeah.
Like, did it make you feel better?
Yeah, because as long as I stayed messed up, then I didn't have any, I didn't cry about anything. I didn't have to face any of those feelings.
Yeah, it shut down the voices and yeah. all the crap.
So, like, then if you're not and you're back in reality and then you look at what you are,
yeah.
what you've become that you were never going to become anyway, then you have to deal with all that. Well, who wants to deal with that?
Yeah.
So you just swing back into it.
Yeah.
And then just continue tearing your whole life apart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You remember whenever you asked the question, like you said, naive,
mm-hmm.
when you asked the question way back when you said, are you real? And you saw the wind, did you ever question even that experience?
No.
Okay. So that's still nope, real.
That's real. I knew it was real. And actually, you know what I remember saying? Why don't you just let me go?
Yeah.
Leave me alone and let me go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if from that point, well, let me ask you, I'm just going to ask you a direct question.
Uh-huh.
Does the love of Jesus for you matter to you?
Yes. Now.
Yeah.
There was one point in time in all this. No.
Okay. And look, I would constitute you as a true believer. I would.
Oh, yeah. Like I said,
so a true
I know
believer.
What I got, and I know. I know that. I mean, and you know, you hear people say, well, I believe this. If it can't be in you if it ain't showing out of you. Well, let me tell you something.
Yeah, that's crap.
That's crap.
That's total crap.
Yeah, because you don't know what people are going to go through.
Mm-mm.
And it doesn't change the fact that, I mean, that he's yours and you're his. No matter what you go through, no matter how angry you get, no matter what you do to yourself. You know, I always say, well, God always knows what you do, you know, this and that. And then it hit me. I said, yeah, he does. But you're the person who's going to live the rest of your life knowing the things that you did, acting the way you did
mm-hmm.
after the fact.
Yeah.
That's your punishment. You get to remember, call to remembrance the things that you did. Even though he loves you as much as he does, look what you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you were selfish or angry or hurt or whatever the reason may be. You know, yeah. we all got our reasons.
Sure. So you, no more church.
No.
No more study in the Bible.
Nope.
No more reading it.
Nope.
Just.
Didn't want to hear it. Didn't want to open it. Somebody tried to talk to me about it. I just be like, that's not something I want to talk to you about.
So is it safe to say that, I mean, I kind of assumed without coming right out and asking, but that's why you really didn't want to come to the podcast because you didn't feel like you could be in it to win it with us in the moment.
If I came there and listened, I was afraid of my own emotions spilling out onto people who didn't deserve it.
Mm. Yeah.
And I wasn't going to do that to people.
Yeah.
So I kept just withdrawing more and more from everybody.
Yeah.
And every once in a while I'd try to, you know, try to do something.
Yeah, I remember like a couple times, like, yeah, I'll be there Thursday, you know, and then something would come
up. Yeah, no. I was like, nope, not going to do it because I just wasn't going to do this to people who I really did love and care about. You know, maybe the people I didn't really love and care about, maybe I wouldn't have cared so much.
Yeah.
But I wasn't going to do that. And I mean, everybody's got their own thing they're going through, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not fair to be. I mean, I was chaotic. It just would have been bad, and I didn't want to do that, so I didn't come and bring it in there.
Yeah.
Plus, I didn't want to hear about how good God was at some points either.
Yeah, because it certainly didn't feel like it doesn't.
Right.
Yeah. I've never had the experience of losing a child. I lost a sister, mm-hmm. but it was, she was a believer, which was unique considering the family we were all coming out of and what we were dealing with, that was the Riley family, Rachel Riley. And, I remember those moments even back then, being upset with him and not, I think the finality of it all is just whenever this life is gone and there's no more interaction with it and not being able to give, like, I'm only here because God allowed me to be, but it's hard for me to look at someone else's life and give him that same respect. You know what I mean? Like, I can say I'm alive because God made me alive. And it's easy to look over, like, God put that person here on the earth. And if whatever he decides to take them, he can under any circumstance, in any fashion he deems to do so. And you're going to tell me that I can't question him. Like, he's not, like, you're always telling me he's good. How is this good? Like, stop with the, this is good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know the verse. All things work together for the good. I know it. Quit trying to shove it down my throat right now because it doesn't seem very good to all of my family. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to drink myself to death and fall off the back of a motorcycle.
Yeah, totally.
And would that be good?
At that point in time, yes, because I was so tired. I was tired of all of it, I was just tired.
Yeah. So... I didn't.
I can remember thinking, go ahead, take me out of here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that sounds crazy, but I did. I was like, go ahead, take me out of here.
Honestly, it doesn't sound crazy. Like, it doesn't. I mean, I know it's weird. I know I'm kind of a nerdy person, but I've had moments too.
I would almost say that people may not ever admit it, but they had to have. There's no way you're getting through this whole life without ever experiencing something that makes you that desperate or angry or hurt. I mean, it may not be the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, I asked the question for a long time. So it's no secret. I was sexually molested as a child.
Okay? Me as well. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Life from day one for me.
Yeah.
As far as I can remember, I've had to fight. I've had to do the best that I can for myself. And getting to this point, I was like, all right. And that's when it all just let out. It all fell out.
I remember asking, one of my dear friends, I said, why do you think that I had to go through that as a child? Like, why did I have to be 5 years old and have to be introduced to that entire world, the sickening part of this life? Why did I have at five? And what is that? And I have people like, well, that's the devil. It's like, the devil doesn't do anything that God doesn't allow. So that means that he knew it.
Right.
And so I had a real problem with that. Are we just like a fun little game for you down here? Is that what's going on? I remember I had all those feelings. I think we would be liars if we said we didn't think like that. But, I still can't shake the hope that was put in me. Do you understand what I mean?
I didn't want the hope anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have never felt like this in my life before, ever.
Yeah.
And, like I said to you, I'm trying to figure out why there's Christmas movies on TV. And it hits me. Because your year's over and it's Christmas time.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to look at Christmas lights. Everything that I, when I say that I lost last year, I lost it.
Like, it was gone. Yeah, you quit your job.
Yeah.
Everything that you were doing, you stopped. Like, the end.
Yeah. I almost burnt my house down.
Man.
I have a big burn hole in my front porch.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Ready to burn it. Just scorched earth.
I just, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't ever want to be this angry again. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, I don't know. It was like, I looked at myself in the mirror one day. And I thought, who are you? And then all the people that I'd ever seen before that I swore I'd never be like those people,
mm-hmm.
there she stood in the mirror. I thought, oh, man, I have definitely become exactly what I don't want to be.
Mm.
And I had turned, I didn't, you know, I didn't pray. I didn't want to talk to God. I didn't want none of that stuff.
Yeah.
But then once you realize, you know, you kind of come back to your senses a little bit and you realize, and then you start thinking about the love that he has, and to think that all the times, all the things I have done,
mm-hmm.
all the mindsets I have been in, he never left.
Yeah.
He never left. Everybody else did. I was just sure run him off. I mean, I had people tell me I couldn't deal with you. Like I had to get away from you, you know, and, but to know he didn't leave.
Yeah.
You know,
and I'm not ignoring you. I'm looking up something.
Oh, you're fine. But then the reality of that is so humbling, because here you're over here acting like an ass.
Right.
You know, and you're blaming him for everything. In reality, you can't, you don't have the right to blame him for everything.
Mm-hmm.
98% of my own hell, I make myself. I mean,
that is the truth.
You can justify it. You can whatever you want to do. I've made my own hell.
We do a lot of it ourselves.
And I just got self-absorbed, and I wanted everything. I guess however you want to look at it, it was all about me.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, it ain't all about you, because when God don't see you, He sees the blood of Jesus Christ. He don't see you. It never was all about you anyway.
Yeah.
But He still stood there with me, because I am one of His. No matter how I acted, no matter what I've done, mm-hmm. that doesn't change any of that. And then that brings a whole nother level to your testimony. It brings you a closer relationship with Him. Through all that, you wouldn't think, you know, I remember reading in the Bible all the time, well, why does the dog eat his own vomit, you know, or why does the pig go back into his own mire? And I never did get that. I never could get that. And then I thought, well, hell, look at this pig standing in the mud, or this dog eating its own vomit, and here you are in the mirror.
Yeah.
You know? And then I was like, well, great. Now what are you going to do?
When you said that a minute ago, it says, you know this story. Just let me read this and think about it. Because there's this one thing that you said that reminded me of it. A certain man had two sons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living.
Mm-hmm.
And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. And when he came to himself, he said, how many hired servants of my father's have bread enough to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son.
Yep.
Make me as one of thy hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. Now, if I were to tell this story the way that the world wants you to know that story, the world will tell you that you got to come back, and you're going to have to do that sucking up like he was talking about. You're going to have to come in, and you're going to have to say, look, you were right. I was wrong. Just put me as a hired hand. This is better than the crap that I've been doing to myself. I took everything that you worked for and I destroyed it. Everything that you gave me, I have literally just laid bare across this whole world.
Mm-hmm.
I've done everything. I've taken everything you give me and ruined it. I almost set it on fire.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know the story, but hearing the words again just...
But you know what? You here's the thing. While you're there in that mud, he's there.
He's there.
He's there.
He never left.
He never leaves.
That's what I was telling you when I said I can't shake it. Remember me saying I can't shake the hope? Even when you didn't want the hope, he was still there. Uh-huh. He says, and he arose and came to his father. Listen to this. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him.
Yeah.
That means he was looking for him.
Yep.
He'd been watching.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and his father saw him and he had compassion and ran. He ran.
I think that's the worst part. He was watching.
Yeah.
He watched everything I did.
Yeah.
And now I will go forward, thankfully, with the love that he has for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll always know he was always watching.
Yeah.
Everything I did.
Yeah. But listen, so he runs up the road and he says he fell on his neck and he kissed him. Mm-hmm. You think he smelled like pig garbage?
Oh, yeah.
You think that he looked pretty rough? You think that he came back destitute?
Yep.
And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. See, he was a son, but he was no longer worthy. He didn't feel worthy. He didn't think he was worthy. He'd definitely done everything to make himself unworthy.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. But the father said to his servants, bring forth the best robe and put it on him. And put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. And bring hither the fatted calf and kill it and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. And he was lost and is found. Mm-hmm.
So
and they
today,
began to be merry.
So today I just say, well, I'm going to be thankful. I'm going to take what I got left.
Mm-hmm.
And move forward.
And so I have some words for those that are in the church that are listening to this that may not like how this story ends. And this is for you. Now, his elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf because he hath received him safe and sound. And he was angry and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him, and he answering said to his father, lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment. I stayed here. I was with you. I did the work. How is it? And yet thou never gavest me a kid. Talking about this, you know, you didn't even give me a little, even a little bit. I was here the whole time. You didn't even give me a little bit that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. And he said unto him, son, thou art ever with me. Thou art ever with me. Mm-hmm. And all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again and was lost and is found. Now, I've had people take that story and they have ripped it apart and they have told me eschatologically what it means and they've told me soteriologically what it means and systematically theologically. I don't give a rip. Yeah. Listen to the story for a minute. It's obvious who the son is. It's obvious who the father is. To me, I can see it plain as day. I don't care if you want to say it's Israel and the Gentiles. We know what the parables were. I get it. But let's look at it from a practical sense. We were lost.
Yeah.
We were lost. And then, to me, this speaks more to believers because these were the ones that were already in the Father's house.
Yeah, like I said back when I said it was naive.
Yeah.
Who would ever think back, thinking of things back then, you'd have never told me, I'd have never believed you
mm-hmm.
that I'd have got so lost now, being one of his. How does one of his get mm-hmm. so lost?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people say, because you were never one of his. Well, I beg to differ.
That's not true.
That's not true.
Matter of fact, you were not only were you one of his, but whenever you asked for the things that he was willing to give you, he gave it all to you.
I mean, I knew. Maybe that's part of the reason why I was so angry. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but people shouldn't, you cannot discern and judge someone's relationship with God based on what you see in their life. You can't do that.
Do not do it.
Mm-mm.
This is why we say so often to love your enemy. means to love a person that's on a path. I keep saying this over and over. The love that's been put into us, we are to love others, whether they are believers or non-believers, mm-hmm. doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter if that believer is high on the mountain or low in the valley or right there in the middle, always working. I mean, you know, like yeah. we love others where they are, not where they're going to be. We love them where they are.
Yeah. A lot of people don't do that.
No. And it's up to us to do it. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, like, I didn't understand everything that you were going through because I've never been in it. I've never dealt with what you've had to deal with. But I have done things in my life where I've tried to destroy everything that I had. I have. I mean, I've done things that are awful. Awful.
Yeah.
I mean, but I still can't shake him.
No.
I can't shake him.
I'm thankful you can't.
When he says, thankful. I will never leave you or forsake you, he means it. He means it. Man. So, this is where, as we come to wrap up this episode, I'll go ahead and tell everybody. So, you're kind of leaving, but you're not leaving. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about this. First of all, I appreciate you coming and seeing me just a couple days before you leave. But you won't be with us full time anymore. You haven't been with us for the last year, but
right.
you've been on sabbatical, and now you guys have an idea of why. But you've decided you've made a change in your career.
Yes.
You want to tell everybody what you're doing?
I have accepted a job as a travel nurse, mm-hmm. Which is a dream that I had.
Yeah.
Thankful God even still allows me to still have that dream.
Yeah.
And has made it come true for me. Yep. I will be traveling to Biddeford, Maine mm-hmm. for my first travel job and will be there until April.
Yep. And I have family in Maine. That's where my dad's side comes from. And I just spent some time up there. And so you aren't really that far away from where my family is, but you're going to be traveling, which means that what we've decided is, so when you hear the intro and you hear Cherry's voice on it, but you don't hear her that much, that's going to stay the same because we don't know where this is taking you, but I do know that you and I are still going to do side studies occasionally yes. where we can when you're ready and able, but you'll always be a part of this and you just won't be here physically all the time. But you did say when you come back into town,
yes.
if we're in the studio, you'll swing yes. by.
I would like to. Yeah. I actually would like to.
Yeah.
Now that my mindset is different, yes.
All the boroughs, you know, miss you and have asked about you and... You know, I've kept a lot of things, you know, of course, because we're friends. I just didn't say a lot of things, but all of them have said that they love you and miss you. And they're glad to hear that you're getting to go and do something that you've dreamed that you could do and that this can happen and that you're still going to be a part of what we're doing here. Just limited.
Yes.
Yeah. But so have you been reading your Bible at all?
I have actually read more of it recently
yeah.
than I have before. It's strange because during that period of my time, like you might hear scripture mm-hmm. or you might hear a song, and it was like, wow, that kind of sounds familiar to me
yeah.
from somewhere, you know?
Yep.
And I was thinking, wow, that's just so strange. Why does it seem so far off? But now... It's not so far off anymore.
Yeah.
And actually, Rodney's cousin had hit me up about a week or so ago and, you know, asked me a question. Normally, I would have rolled my eyes and probably ignored the text message altogether, but I actually engaged in the conversation with him and talked about the scripture and, you know, picked up David's book and, you know, started read it. And it don't seem so far off anymore.
Yeah.
And it's actually comforting.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so things are starting to come back around.
Yeah.
Songs that I used to sing at church, I'd almost forgot the words to them.
Yeah.
And then I'll be in the shower and all the words come back in my mind.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So how does it feel if I tell you that you're a saint?
unworthy. I know I'm a saint. I know that.
Do you remember when I told you you were a saint and you said, no, I'm a sinner saved by grace?
Yes.
I said, Cherry, that's the definition of a saint.
Well, I tell you what, if they heard, if I sing that song now, boy, sheesh. I tell you.
Yeah, most people that don't know that you do sing that song. Maybe I'll try to find one when you sang it before and I'll share it so they can hear you singing.
I don't even think at this point, I don't even think I could get through that whole song singing it without just bawling.
So is it safe to say you went into a far country?
Oh, yeah.
And now you're on the way back?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But you're leaving us and going to a far country up in Maine, Battleford, Maine.
Yeah. Man, just looking back, I just don't see how in the world I ever got there. You know, I think our minds are a mess.
Yeah, it makes me sit here and think to myself, you know, Rick, don't get into that position of thinking you'll never get there because that's crazy.
Oh, yeah,
You don't know. Like, I've told people, like, if something happened to Holly or something happened to one of my kids, like, I don't know what I would do.
I never even seen it coming.
Yeah.
I kept thinking, I got this.
I was talking to Holly's cousin, who's a preacher, who happens to be Rodney's cousin. Does that mean? No, wait a minute. No, it wasn't his cousin. It's his friend.
Okay.
Yeah. It's his friend because Holly and Rodney aren't related. But one of Holly's cousins, he's a preacher, and he loves Rodney. He ran around with Rodney back in the day.
Yeah.
And I won't say his name just because for right now. But I had a conversation with him one day. We were down here at Costa's Kitchen eating breakfast, and I saw him, and we were sitting there talking, and he looked at me, and he said, you know, he said, if something happened to my boy the way that it happened to him, he said, and here I am a preacher, he said, I'll tell you right now, he said, it'd take everything God had to keep me from being a murderer.
I'll tell you something about that man.
Yeah.
Through all this I've been through.
Yeah.
He kept popping up.
Yeah.
Pop up down there, I'd be down there buying my beer.
Yeah.
Pop up at the gas station. He just stopped by my house. That man never once.
No, he loves y'all.
Never once beat me with scripture.
No.
He never, you know what he did? He just looked at me and said, just come by and see us sometime. We know, you know, we love you.
Yeah.
I remember looking at him saying, you know, I'm having a hard time.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's all right.
Yeah.
Hands down, that man.
I love that man.
Especially in my book.
He
I'll
is
tell you
to
that.
Me too.
Him and his wife are great people.
Yes, they are.
They are great people. And I hate to say it, but most people, if you would have seen me walking out of the store carrying beer, might have been like, well, you know, God don't want, you know.
Yeah.
And I know it would have been in a loving way, but it would have been a really bad timing.
Yeah.
You know? But this
Look,
man.
Look, I just set fire to my house. Don't think I won't set fire to you.
Know, but he didn't do that. He just stood. You could be standing there drinking the beer, and the man would still stand there and talk to you.
Yeah, he told me, he just said, I just love him. He said, I just love him. He is a sweet man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I adore preachers and men like that. They, you know, we understand, especially around here, the way people look at alcohol or drugs or problems like that. But he'll get down in the trenches with you, man, and just tell you, hey, I love you. I appreciate that.
Yeah,
I do. Too. That goes a long way with me. A long way.
Me too.
Well, Cherry Lewis, I got to ask Billy's question. So where do you go when you die?
I'm going to be with Jesus.
Aren't you glad?
Yeah, I'm just going to change. The only thing is, instead of all these far countries I got going on this side, I don't have to worry about them anymore. I'll be with him.
That's right. Yeah, that's good. I really appreciate you coming and doing this.
Thanks. I appreciate it, too.
I'm going to miss having you around, but I love you and I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love you, too.
Hey, listen there. She doesn't say that often, just so you know.
No, I don't.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you guys again next time on the Burrows of Berea.
See ya.
Peace out. Hey, guys. This is Rick from the Burrows of Berea. A lot of people have been asking us, hey, what is this Patreon thing? Our old Patreon ad didn't work very well. So here you go, guys. Go to www.patreon. That is patreon.com. Let me do that again. patreon.com/theburrowsofberea. If you go to the Patreon page, you will find that we have different levels that you can give at. We have a $3 level, a $5 level. We've got a $10 level and a $20 level. I thought about putting a $1,000 level there, but you never know how that's going to work out, right, Andy? That's right. So go to www.patreon.com/theburrowsofberea and give us all of your money.
even a little bit will be fine.
Yeah. And that $5,000 wouldn't hurt my
either. No, it would hurt nobody.
Thanks, guys.